There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We can't play the highlights of every single game, but what we can tell you and play you is the best of the semi-finals. Four teams went to battle over the last 7 days. Two teams have come out to face off today in the third, fourth final playoff. And then, of course, tomorrow sees France taking on Croatia. Let's just remind ourselves of what happened in the semis.
It's been quite a journey, and 32 teams have been reduced to four. So here it is, the first semi-final. Griezmann with the corner, kicking and Titi! There's the breakthrough! France played some sublime football. Witzel blocked away! And it is over! Allez les Bleus!
Croatia for the first time, or England again at last. It is Kieran Trippier. It is delicious! And fired home by Perisic! Mandzukic! Croatia hit the front! And Croatia, for the first time ever, will play in a World Cup final. Croatia against France.
Croatia against France, 7 o'clock local time, Dubai time, that is tomorrow evening, live down here at Bourassa in the Superdome. Before that, and a little closer than that, it is England against Belgium for the glory of third place in the World Cup. Team news, Chris McCarty.
Yeah, I've got it here. Let me run through. Let's start with Belgium if we can. As you would expect, no real surprises. Both Roberto Martinez and Gareth Southgate have made changes from the sides that got beat by France and Croatia respectively. For Belgium, it's the same 3-4-3 formation that has held them in good stead throughout the tournament. Thibaut Courtois in goals. It's a back three of Alderweireld, Kompany and Vertonghen. Thomas Meunier, the right wing back from PSG, comes back in. Tielemans is given a start ahead of Mauro Anfilini. He partners Axel Witsel in the centre of the park, and then Nasir Chadli reverts back to his left wing wing back slot. And then the front three, and it's a good front three: Kevin De Bruyne, Eden Hazard and Romelu Lukaku. As for England, changes afoot. Jordan Pickford, he does keep his place in goal. It's a back three of Maguire, Stones and Phil Jones as well, given a start ahead of Kyle Walker. Kieran Trippier at right wing back, Danny Rose coming in for Ashley Young at left wing back. Fabian Delph and Eric Dier are in midfield. Ruben Loftus-Cheek gets the nod ahead of Dele Alli. He'll be paired with Raheem Sterling behind the big man, the skipper Harry Kane. 6 goals in this World Cup. He will be looking to add to that tally as he bids to close out on that golden boot.
It's exactly as you said, Chris. It's Gareth Southgate and Roberto Martinez saying, who wants to play for this? And then perhaps those that do not feel they can get up for the occasion are given the chance. And it's nice to see a few changes made, but two strong teams overall.
Absolutely, two massively strong teams. I think looking at it, Belgium will favour their chances this evening of getting a result and getting that third place. Not that it really matters at a FIFA World Cup. One man who has been there, the lucky so-and-so, throughout this unbelievable, unforgettable FIFA World Cup. It is a good friend of ours working for Sky Sports over in the UK. Delighted to say that joining us live from St. Petersburg, it is Anton Tolui. And we say a very good afternoon to you, Anton.
Good afternoon, Robbie. How are you, mate?
Great to have you on, mate. We're fine on this side. Great to have you on, Anton. And listen, third place playoff of a World Cup. No one really remembers the teams that finished third. What's been the mood? I know you've been following England very closely. What has been the mood in the England camp ahead of this match? Excited to try and finish on a high, or would they rather be back home now and enjoying their summer holidays?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, you guys alluded to it, really. I'm sure the managers would have asked the players whether they fancied this more than anything else. Officially, the line is everyone's up for it. Everybody wants to finish third. England players want to finish, have their best ever finish since 1966 and all that. But you can't help but feel they were so deflated, understandably, Wednesday night. But I think it says a lot, the fact that someone like Kieran Trippier, for example, is starting. You know, he doesn't want his World Cup to finish. It's such a wonderful World Cup for him individually. on such a low point. He, even though he's was absolutely shattered, doesn't he? He had nerve problems and huge cramp problems at the end of that game on Wednesday night. He still wants to play. I think that says a lot, really. I think it's just such an individual thing. I think some players will be up for it more than others because that's, you know, understandable. I think it's basic human emotion, isn't it? If you get knocked out of the tournament and then you play a game that, like you said, nobody remembers who really finishes third, would you be up for it? Well, officially, Gareth Southgate says everybody's up for it. But then, officially, last time England played Belgium, they were up for that as well, weren't they? So, you know, it's all psychology.
And what about your thoughts on this third, fourth place playoff, Anton? Would you do away with it if you were FIFA, or is it a case of it brings in a few extra ticket sales, it swells the coffers even further, and it's just another excuse to fill a stadium?
As a football fan, I think it's the most pointless game in world football. If I were for FIFA, I'd say it's very important because it boosts that $1.5 billion bank balance they've got, isn't it? So, look, like I said, it's a full game. It's a game Saturday prime time in many countries, and they've got arguably some of the best players in the world on the pitch. So they're not going to get rid of it at all. This game isn't going anywhere.
Anton, as well, what has been the mood like? Obviously, I'm conscious as well, we haven't really spoken to you, or we haven't spoken to you since England's defeat to Croatia in those semi-finals. A step too far for this current guise of this England team. Croatia don't want to go there, but I will. First real test that England come up against, they fail. What has been the mood like? Is there a sense, though, that they have still done an unbelievable job and that they have, I guess, gone probably perhaps further than anyone, us included, would have ever expected?
Yeah, there's undoubtedly pride. The pride is the word that's been used a lot, and it's twofold. I think, you know, the whole bringing the nation together and getting everybody interested in the international team again, yeah, definitely that's happened, and they take great pride in that. And they've got further than most people thought they would. So, again, you know, there's pride amongst that. But they were, 20 minutes away from essentially going to the World Cup final. There is no way that these England players aren't walking away somewhat disappointed from the campaign because they're professional footballers and they should want to win the thing. So they will be proud of what they've achieved, but I think it says a lot that there isn't going to be a parade, there isn't going to be a homecoming, there isn't going to be celebrations. The England players, when they land at Birmingham Airport tomorrow, are just getting in cars and going straight home. So I think that says it all, really. The fact of the matter is, this is a missed opportunity for England. Regardless of how well they've done, they were so, so close to going even further.
And what's next for Gareth Southgate and England, Anton? Is it a case of, and looking further down the line here, I know they've had a lot of success in the under categories, the under 20s, and whatnot. But in terms of developing players of the caliber of a Luka Modric, we saw in that second half England started to fall away, primarily due to their absolute lack of being able to hold the ball and control the game. Is that the long term future for this England team, to try and develop players of that technical ability who are able to do that?
Completely. You only need to look at St George's Park, the success of the youth teams, the links up with the Premier League Academy. This has been a long-term plan that's only just starting to come to fruition. Gareth Southgate yesterday said that, look, this team will be better in 2 years' time. This team will be better in 4 years' time. And that's what they're thinking. I think the next squad, when England play Spain and Croatia in September, will be absolutely fascinating, because you have this squad which did very well, but a lot of these players will barely play in the first couple of weeks of the season because they'll be too tired and they need to have some time off and then go through a very quick pre-season. So if the likes of Jill Foden breaks into the Manchester City team, Jadon Sancho starts brilliantly at Dortmund, or Ryan Sessegnon has a fantastic start at Fulham, I could see these players getting the nod, if not September, then October, certainly, because, a lot of these players, and a couple of players probably, Gary Cahill was the only one that may not play for England again. But I think the next England squad will be really interesting to see whether they go, right, we know what our lot can do. Let's bring another couple of young players in. Let's go all in on the project that the DFA started a few years ago, and just really test where they are and what they still need to do.
Let's look ahead to this one then. A very strong team that Roberto Martinez, the Belgian boss, has named. He has said in the wake of that defeat to France in the semi-finals that he hopes that these boys can go out on a high. He wants victory today. How do you see this game? And more importantly, I guess, Anton, from a viewing point of view, what do you expect the tempo to be like? Is it going to have the feel of a testimonial today?
The Community Shield kicks off in 3 weeks' time, and the Premier League kicks off in 4 weeks' time. It's going to be really interesting. The atmosphere around here, officially, there are 5,000 England fans, but I saw quite a few of them selling their tickets and trading their tickets earlier in the centre of St Petersburg, and it just feels like a massive glorified friendly. I don't know whether that will translate on the pitch, I don't know, but I can't imagine everyone's going to go hell for leather on this because, you know, the players will be thinking, right, well, I've got to be back in the club in a couple of weeks' time. You know, I want to do well there. This is, you know, the great thing about this England camp is they all say it feels like club football, it feels like home. Well, they're going home and they're going back to club football where they feel they're most comfortable, and I don't think they'll want to jeopardise that potentially by, you know, doing anything that reckless or dangerous on the pitch. So I could see it being, it could still be an entertaining game, but I could see it being, you know, I think a lesser tempo. It's also 30 Celsius here today, which I think will sap the players as well.
And the final one from us, Anton, what about the game that really does matter tomorrow? France, Croatia. France will go in as favourites 20 years after they won their only World Cup. How do you see it going, and do you think they will live up to that tag of favourites?
I think it's fascinating because Deschamps doesn't want to be the manager that took France to two consecutive major finals and then didn't get them over the line. I'm fascinated by this France team. The team that started the tournament, the first game, had an average age of 24. England's average age is around 26, and they're being, you know, billed as a young team. So I genuinely think this France team is fascinating. You've got brilliant individual players, obviously, like Mbappe, Griezmann, and I think one of the most underrated players in the entirety of Europe, really, to be really honest, is N'Golo Kante. I think he's had an excellent tournament as well. But for me, it's exactly what we said about Croatia going into the semi-final. I really like this Croatia team. At the beginning of the tournament, I tweeted that I am all in on this Croatia team, and I'm not going back on it. I think they're streetwise. I think they can make life really difficult, and they've got player of the tournament to be in Luka Modric, who can just pull the strings. So I mean, it's going to be tight. I think it could be frustrating for France, and I personally think Croatia will edge it.
Oof, a bold prediction that, Anton Tolui. We expect nothing less from you, my friend. Croatia to win the FIFA World Cup. What a story that would be. Listen, Anton, a big, big thank you from all of us here at Dubai 103.8 for all of your work, all of your time spent talking to us over the course of the past 4.5 weeks. It has been an unforgettable World Cup. It's been great to talk to you, and you have lived it. You've lived every moment of it. So we thank you for that. Safe journey back to the UK, and enjoy the next couple of days.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest again.
Indeed we will. Thank you very much. That is the voice of Anton Tolui. He works for Sky Sports over in the UK. He's been an absolute trooper for us, The lucky so-and-so. He's been at most of the games. He's been to every England game, that is. And let's hope that England, for him more than anyone else, go out with a bang today.
And in a handful of sentences, he has made me doubt France all of a sudden. And I did think, you know, it is France's to lose. I think it will be relatively straightforward for them. But he's actually made a very good case for Croatia there. And France have got those memories of 2 years ago as well that might just haunt them on the night.
Absolutely. One thing that France are not short of is confidence in the camp at the moment. Things seem to be clicking for them ahead of the World Cup final tomorrow. A bit the superstitions. They've got this wonderful superstition before the game at the moment. Remember the last time they were there? What was the superstition?
Yeah, it was Laurent Blanc would always kiss the bald head, that is, of Fabien Barthez.
Okay, so they've got a new one this time as well. So remind me of the name of the defender with the amazing...
Samuel Umtiti?
No, the defender with the amazing... moustache.
For France?
Yep.
Benjamin Pavard?
The beard and the beard and the amazing moustache. I'll get the name in a minute.
Oh, yeah, Adil Rami. Sorry.
Adil Rami. Yeah. So he's got this amazing thing. That he's been working on it throughout the whole thing. Each and every member of the squad have to touch the moustache before they go on the field.
I love that. Here's another useless piece of information for you. Do you know who his other half is?
No.
Adil Rami.
No.
Pamela Anderson.
Get away.
Ah, yes.
I kid
yes.
you not.
Get yeah. away.
Pamela Anderson is his squeeze.
Sure she can. Oh, no. let's get some more insight from the... Yeah. I was going to referencing the moustache. That's all, fellas. Don't know where you were going. Let's get some more insight from the French team. Antoine Griezmann has been instrumental out there on the field. But he is a humble man as well. Not man to take all the plaudits. In fact, he has singled out one of his teammates for specific praise.
Kiki does so much for us. We saw what he can do just 20 seconds into the game against Belgium. While everybody was still feeling their way into the game, he caught them cold and ran at them full throttle. Only he could do that so early in the match. He has so much to offer. He links up play, beats his man, creates space. I just hope we see him at his best in the final. Although Croatia have their star players as well, Modric and Rakitic, two big players, technically on top of their game. We know everything goes through them, and hopefully the coach will have a plan up his sleeve.
That was Antoine Griezmann talking about Kiki. Who's Kiki?
Kylian Mbappe.
Indeed, yeah. There's another one we didn't know about the French squad. They've all got nicknames, apparently, for
each
other.
Yeah, I read on a report as well this past week that Kylian Mbappe apparently fell out with Neymar last season at PSG because Neymar and Edinson Cavani call Kylian Mbappe, or no, it's not. It's Neymar and Dani Alves who call or nicknamed Kylian Mbappe Donatello from the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles because they feel that he's got a resemblance to Donatello, which I'm led to believe Kylian Mbappe, or certainly his mum, I've not been too best pleased about.
Not too best pleased.
He's too young to remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, isn't he?
He maybe is.
He might have been a bit miffed with Neymar, but he's picked up a couple of his bad habits and
indeed,
bad traits as well, as we've seen in the last couple of games. A great talent, but obviously still on that learning curve. Let's hear from another of the French squad. Samuel Matuidi has been instrumental in a number of the games already and is looking for another big one tomorrow.
Oui, honnêtement, on a tous, comme je l'ai dit, rêvé de...
It's a child's dream to play in the World Cup final. It's so close now, we can touch the trophy. But we have 90 minutes to get through. It's the game of our lives, and we have to play well to win. Croatia looked as if they were playing their first match of the tournament against England. They look sharp, strong, and have experienced players. I don't think it will be a handicap that they have played extra time three matches in a row.
Matuidi there giving his thoughts ahead of tomorrow's final. Should we do let's not do predictions. Should we do?
We can't do. I mean, we love a prediction, Robbie and I, and we often get them wrong.
Go on, let's do a wrong one.
Similar to what I said about France-Belgium, my heart really does want Croatia to win. My head says that it will be France. I just think they are the fresher. Kylian Mbappe, a genuine match winner. Antoine Griezmann, I don't think gets the credit he deserves. And again, I'll say N'Golo Kanté, the best midfielder in his position in world football. He will again put out the fires. He will again make sure Luka Modric doesn't get the space. And I do think that France will just edge this. And I will be genuinely heartbroken for Croatia, because if they were to go on and win it, of course it's just a prediction at this stage, if they were to go on and win it, what a story that is. A nation of 4 million people, only came into existence as an independent nation in 1991, internationally recognised in January 1992, made their debut in a FIFA World Cup in 1998. If they were to win it, it would be extraordinary. And I'd make a good argument, the greatest World Cup success we've ever seen.
And to top all that, they have no blueprint, they have no master plan, they have no pathway for their players. A lot of it is Dinamo Zagreb. It all started with that club, the development of good players. That club would then harvest all the good talent. It's a bit more competition now in Croatia, but most of those, in fact almost all of the players in the squad, play their football abroad. So the level of the achievement is quite extraordinary. Sticking with the predictions though, I am going to go against them. I'm going to stick with France. I just thought France in the last two games have just been rock solid at the back. They really have. Umtiti and Varane have got a great understanding with one another, and they look so dangerous. Even against Belgium, when Belgium had all the ball, France looked the more threatening on the counter-attack. Kylian Mbappe is rapid. He's got electric pace, we know that. And Croatia, taken to extra time and penalties by Denmark, taken to extra time and penalties by Russia. And yes, they were the better team than England, there's no doubt about that. But France are a different prospect altogether. And I think if it goes to form, France will win. But as we so often know, Tom, football does not go to form. It does some strange things. And as I echo Chris's sentiments, it'd be lovely to see Croatia win. I think France will win 2-0.
For my ruble's worth, I think, a shocker's on the cards. I think France go on with a lot of confidence at the moment. I just think it's been such a difficult one to predict, not just for Farah, but for all of us during the entire
tournament.
It's certainly
been tough for Farah.
and I think that narrative will continue. And how will we remember the Russian World Cup? By that narrative of surprises that got thrown up and surprise results. And I think there is one more in store for us. France going on with a lot of confidence as well. Undoubtedly the best team in the tournament, undoubtedly the best team on paper. But that you know, as was Argentina, as was Germany, as was Spain going into this tournament. Look what happened to them. So, I don't know. I just think we've got another surprise in store. I just want to touch on the game that we've got before all that, which is England against Belgium. That kicks off at 6 o'clock. England making a few changes for their lineup. Belgium going in with a strong team. Didier Drogba has been asked for his thoughts, not just on France and their chances to lift the Jules Rimet trophy, but also how England went. A man who played the majority of his career in the English Premier League. These were his thoughts on England's performance this year.
Could I ask you, is it a missed opportunity for England?
Of course it is, because you're one step away from playing a final. But at the same time, I think the country needs to be proud of this young generation and what they achieved. And I was very surprised and happy with the atmosphere around this team, you know, and the media supporting the team, all the country behind them, giving them a chance, not really believing in it, and then when it's coming closer, you could see that everyone was behind them. So there's disappointment. I was disappointed for them as well, but at the same time, I was happy that players like Loftus-Cheek, Marcus Rashford, and all these young boys managed to perform at this at highest level competition in the world.
Who is your player for England? Do you think has been the best for England?
Harry Kane, very good striker.
Yeah, it's just a strikers union coming together there.
Yeah, and
isn't
he scored
it?
A few penalties, didn't he?
Strikers union, they always look after each other, don't they? Let's talk about the young boys, if we can, for just a few moments' time, because I suppose that's one thing. I just must preempt this little conversation, this little part with, you know, I don't want to dedicate this entire show or this segment to England football. We realise there are other teams in this tournament. England have had a great run. I was really surprised by the anti-England sentiment from fans worldwide after that defeat, you know, the relief on so many fans, I suppose because of that ability for English fans to brag and talk up their game. But I suppose let's look to the future, and we've heard a few names mentioned by Anton, by yourself as well, looking ahead to those internationals against Croatia in October and November of this year. The likes of Phil Foden, Sessegnon coming into the Premier League. We've seen the success of the under-20s, the under-17s
yes.
for England as well. There's something to build on there, isn't
absolutely,
there?
Massively there is. You know, let's go back to Greg Dyke's comments all those years, or what, 2 years ago, where 2022 was the focus for England. And Robbie's asked me all week long about this England team. Yes, they've still got deficiencies. I thought Graham Souness, outlined those. It's clear to see where the deficiencies are. I still don't think they can control a football match. I don't see them enough getting on the ball and dictating things. Then again, as France showed in their semi-final victory over Belgium, you don't necessarily need that. You need a structure and a plan, and you need to follow it to a letter. But undoubtedly, the building blocks of England moving forward already in place. Gareth Southgate deserves enormous credit for that. The English FA do. They've won the under-17 World Cup. They won the under-20 World Cup as well. And the thing that excites me the most, young English talent, British talent, because I'll throw in a couple of Scots as well, looking abroad now, Tom. There's a lot of agents who are managing the interests of young boys. Germany, all of a sudden, seems to be the best place to go. We saw Jadon Sancho, the young boy who's got a huge future in the game, 17 years of age. Manchester City ready to lavish him with £20,000 a week. Not having it. Off to Borussia Dortmund he goes. He gets the number 7 shirt. He is starting for Borussia Dortmund week in, week out. He's a boy of 18. You look at someone as well as Ademola Lookman. At Everton, sign him from Charlton. Sam Allardyce doesn't really fancy him. Derby coming from, he's having none of it. I want to go to RB Leipzig. Well, I don't really want you to go to RB Leipzig. You'll learn a lot more for Derby. I don't care what you think. I want to go to Germany. And now we're seeing RB Leipzig want to make his move permanently. He's a young boy learning his trade over in the Bundesliga. So there are a couple of instances where there are younger players stepping out of their comfort zone. And I think the future is very, very bright. And I'm with Anton. I would love to see Gareth Southgate, now that he's riding this crest of a wave, be bold in his next squad, bring Sancho in, bring Lookman in, bring Ryan Sessegnon in, who's had a wonderful season at Fulham and a couple of seasons since he broke through. He's a young boy of 17, and really start putting the building blocks in for 4 years' time.
I suppose one thing I just want to throw to Robbie here is, I take that point completely about the youth and everything, but you know, you've got to have that balance. There was a fascinating piece I was listening to midweek from, I can't remember for the life of me who was saying, but it was talking about what do you want to see for the next couple of games? What do you want to see, or what do you think England lacked in this one? And they say what they need is they need someone like a Luka Modric, Rich, or somebody who can just play a very telling pass from midfield and open things up. That's something they were lacking here today. Two names he threw in as well. Two names who didn't make the squad this time. Jack Wilshere, Adam Lallana. Obviously Lallana was off the back of an injury as well. But the fact that those names were being thrown around at the end as players who've got a little bit different, who can do something, can open up a defence with a pass or something. Again, to have them knocking on the door gives options.
True. But I don't think they didn't fit into the Gareth Southgate system and the way that he wanted to play in this World Cup. I think for the first time in a long time, he had a set idea. An England team came into the World Cup with an idea of how they were going to play. They were going to be physical. They were going to take advantage of the fact they were excellent on set pieces. And they were going to look to I guess, maybe not see so much of the ball, not control so much of the ball, but control teams with their physicality and their threat from those set pieces. So Jack Wilshere, for me, is an overrated player. I don't think he's all that good. I think for as many times as he is a technically gifted footballer, in the sense that England don't have those types of player in many different positions, and he is a midfielder who can look good, who was often talked about as someone that could have played for a team like Barcelona a few years ago because he was that good on the ball. But given the injury run-up that he had, given the fact that he was kind of out of form, Chris, and not really excelling himself, I think Southgate just picked his best squad. And you can second-guess this all the time and all the way you want. You can't win a tournament just by scoring goals from set pieces. And that's basically what England tried to do. 9 out of 12 of their goals came from set pieces. And I think there's an understanding that culturally there has to be a change. Mm. It's not just one player. It's not just... If you drop Luka Modric into the England squad, I don't think their footballing culture would necessarily change.
You got an English grandmother or something we can turn to?
He sounds pretty Croatian to me in interviews, I must say.
It's Luke, isn't it?
Yeah. Lukey Mod.
Luke. Luke Modern, yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's nitpicking. I don't think Lallana was the answer. I don't think Wilshere was the answer. I think... a different approach going forward, which is, according to Chris, is already underway, in the sense that it's just a building a more sophisticated footballing philosophy for the future, and getting those players, bringing those players through that can actually play that way of football. That's the future for England, not just one player to be a solution for one problem.
Going to take a short break when we come back. More build-up ahead of England against Belgium at 6 o'clock in the penultimate game of this year's World Cup. Plus, Lords, let's get down to Lords and find out what's happening in the cricket. England are taking on India in the second ODI. I'll give you a scorecard update after this.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
David Willier's just gone in the cricket. Joe Root is still there, though, 106 not out. England, by all accounts, have just lost their seventh wicket. We'll give you an update on that one in just a few moments' time. I'm literally getting an update as we speak. I'll bring you up to date with that. Still showing a six down, but certainly Willie is not being featured in the scorecard. Joe Root, though, is on 106. England have moved to 307 for a loss of six, maybe seven wickets, remains to be seen, with about two overs to go. Update you on that. What's happening in centre court? Robbie Greenfield.
This extraordinary match just continues to get better and better. The players are pushing each other to new heights. Nadal, Djokovic, deep into the fifth set now. Djokovic asking a lot of questions of Rafa Nadal. I've just seen a stat there. The Serb has had 16 break points. He's only converted three of them. Nadal, on the other hand, has converted four of his six break points. And Djokovic had another one. It's a virtual match point because it's 4-3 in this fifth set. But Nadal has saved that. He got it back to juice. He got the advantage with a blistering forehand winner, and he's just dispatched yet another forehand winner, Tom. It's 4-4 in this final set. Rafa Nadal is there on willpower and strength of character at the moment. Novak Djokovic has probably been the better player throughout the course of this match, but Rafa Nadal simply will not lie down, Chris McCarthy.
Is there anyone, I genuinely mean this, and 4-0-0-1, let us know your thoughts on this one. Is there anyone that embodies just never give up and epitomise never giving up and brutish force? You're nodding. You're going to tell me some West Ham player, Neil Brazier. Andy Carroll. I knew that was coming, but... He is from a different world as Rafa Nadal. I give him all the credit in the world, all my respect and power to him. In those clutch moments, time and time again, he just is able to deliver.
And they're on a grass court under the roof. Every single environmental advantage is with Djokovic. He prefers the faster court. He prefers the indoor conditions as well. Rafa Nadal, the clay court master, the man with the 11 French Open titles. Yes, he's a two-time Wimbledon champion, but he is taking Djokovic all the way. They're both at the top of their game. I'm loving this. 4-4 in the fifth set.
Keeping an eye on the cricket for you, but also conscious of the fact that they're coming to the conclusion of the Bastille Day stage on this year's Tour de France.
They certainly are. We're 40 kilometres to go, under 40 kilometres, in fact. We are into the final stages. We will have, no doubt about it, a bunch sprint finish in just under an hour's time. It is still Fabien Grelier and Marco Minard who lead the way. Their lead, though, over the peloton is down to below 2 minutes, and the pace is starting to wind up for the peloton. And on off awful lot of people today fancying the homeboy, Arnaud Demare, to come through and get success on Bastille Day for France. He is the Groupama FDJ sprinter, and he is in that peloton, so I'm excited about it. It's like Formula One in reverse. We love F1 for the start, and then you can switch off and come back in an hour and a half. With the Tour de France, it's all about the ending. The ending is what separates the men from the boys, and in the sprinting, and it will be a sprint finish today, look out for the likes of Cavendish, not won a stage yet, Peter Sagan, Marcel Kittel, and of course the home favourite, Arnaud Demare. So that one getting coming to a conclusion within the next 15 minutes or so, Tom.
Just back to Lourdes, where I can tell you David Willey has been reinstated. He survived that run-out call from India. I must make a mention of David Willey as well. 45 from 27 balls. Nice little knock from the all-rounder, proving his worth. England now 312 for 6, thanks in no small part to a certain Joe Root. He's gone to 108 now. He's now joined the most ODI hundreds for England. He is joint on the top of that list with Marcus Trescothick at the moment. So what about Joe Root, who is now into the final over of that innings. I just wanted to play you this little bit by Dawid Milan. He was interviewed during the week about his England prospects at the moment. Obviously, Milan, he's got his berth in the test team at the moment. He's to continue trying to hold on to that. He's been asked whether he reckons he could break into the ODI team. He said he obviously would love to. He was called up to the squad this year as a bit of a backup and support, this week, I should say. And he was asked what would need to happen in order for him to get into the team.
I think the only way I'm getting in is if someone falls down the stairs, or maybe three people fall down the stairs at the moment. But look, it's nice to be in and around the team and to be around if people do go down and get injured. And the only way you can sort of push your way into that team is to be around the squad. You know, you can score as many runs as you want in county cricket, but if you're not in and around the squad, if someone gets injured or something, then you're not going to get that opportunity. So it's just nice to be in and around the squad. And hopefully if I do get an opportunity, I can score some runs and push my way in.
Dawid Milan there talking about his prospects of getting in. I'm sure he wouldn't be behind anyone pushing them down. Mind you wouldn't want to be Dawid Milan behind you in the change room, would you, coming down the stairs?
Absolutely not. After you, Dawid, because I don't want to be following you.
Go on, Dawid, you go down first.
But he makes the point, and I mean, we saw Joe Root, Owen Morgan, drop Joe Root for the final T20 matchup, didn't we? And that gives you an idea of the strength and depth. Obviously, different players for different occasions. And then looking at that England batting lineup and their ODI team, Jason Roy can be destructive. Johnny Bear, still, we know what he can do. Joe Root, as good as he is. Owen Morgan, Ben Stokes, Joss Butler, Moeen Ali. And there we see Davey Wiley with 45 from 27. So talk about depth in your batting
order. That's without Alex Hales, who's picked up an injury.
Alex Hales.
I mean, how do you get him in? You know, with Ben Stokes back in the mix now as well. It's a problem. It's a nice headache for Owen Morgan to have. He is the captain of the ODI and the T20 team. Let's hear from him now. He was very, very conscious of the fact of how crucial this particular game was going to be.
I think given that there's only one left-arm Chinaman in the world, it's not a huge concern. You play against one team and he happens to be very good. He's not just any old left-arm Chinaman. So again, you have to give credit where credit's due. He did bowl well. We need to, between now and the next game, clarify our plans, commit to our plans, and just be better. I think most of them, yeah. Yeah, I think most of them. You clearly weren't. No chance. Is it in the racing post?
Are those the thoughts of Owen Morgan? He was in good spirits a little earlier on. Another sort of nice little start, not from him. But it is England's talisman, Joe Root, who's doing the most damage. He scored that 100 as England have moved to 315 for 6 from 49.1 overs. Keep an eye on that one. He was referring to the left-armed Chinaman there. Now, that's not a man from China.
No.
That's just Kuldeep Yadav, who has been a sensation. Brought in, we saw the first of him in that T20 team. Obviously, he for some reason got dropped. Yeah. He was left out for the third T20 between the two teams. Come into this one as well. I'm predicting we're going to see him a lot throughout the summer in the test as well. He's got to be in that test. Oh,
absolutely. Tom, 6 for 25 he took in that first ODI. Today, he's 3 for 68. So, okay, he's been smashed a little bit around. And I guess the test for Kuldeep moving forward, still a young man, 23 years of age, but what a talent he is, will be when the video boys, the analysis boys, look at him a lot closer and start working him out. The test will be, what can he do to, I guess, stay relevant, stay fresh and keep the batsmen on their toes? But yeah, we're going to be hearing an awful lot more about it. And he was asked about this in the press conference afterwards, just about what he thinks about his test aspirations. Before that, though, he was talking up the fact that he's just having a field day, loving life, playing for the Indian cricket side and taking on some of the best batsmen in the world that England have got.
Definitely. I think we are getting a good wicket, actually. I think the wicket was very good, too bad. And they were around 10 over 70, 75 plus, and just we are hoping for the wicket. And at the same time, I was looking for the wicket. And and luckily, I got 3 wickets in a 2 over. That really changed the momentum for us. And I'm enjoying English conditions now. And perfect for any spinners who is turning the ball. I didn't try anything new. I just stick to my basics and just ball wicket to wicket and vary my pace and my variations. And talk about test cricket. So I'm actually hoping for the test call. And let's see what happens in a couple of days when they announce the test team.
Oh, to be in Indian selectors' shoes at the moment. Can you imagine us being the England cricket team, having a problem like that? You know, should we play Kuldeep Yadav, the mystery spinner who's taken about 25 wickets since he's landed, or should we leave him out?
Ah, let's just chuck him in, shall we? Ravi Ashwin will be scared for his place, though, that is for sure, in that test team. But 23 years of age, doing what he's doing. 9 wickets in the last ODI, the last 2 ODIs and counting. Quite extraordinary.
Just to let you know that England have moved on to 321 for the loss of 6 wickets. Good final over from England. 1 ball remaining. David Willey is on 49 not out. Joe Root has moved to 113 not out.
We're talking about England's batting lineup, though, Tom. India's Rohit Sharma, Shikhar Dhawan, KL Rahul, you've got Virat Kohli, Suresh Raina, MS Dhoni, and then the all-rounder Hardik Pandya. I mean, the standard, and that's why there's a lot of intrigue, and I cannot wait for the test series. I think they're playing 5 tests from August 1st. It's going to be awesome. Is it 5?
3.
3, it's yeah. 3, sorry, 3 tests. So 3 T20s, 3 ODIs, and the 3 test matches. It's so evenly poised because there is just so many destructive individuals that both teams possess.
I like this. The look of this Kuldeep. He is young, he's buoyant, he seems to enjoy the game as well. Why wouldn't you? And you're picking up wickets left, right and centre. What I love as well is the commentators. You know, you've got seasoned commentators in that box, the likes of Nasser Hussain and Michael Vaughan and Jeffrey Boycott and your Athertons. None of them can pick him. None of them can pick him. And that's with video analysis and things like that. Imagine being a batsman in front of him.
Well, you were saying earlier, Johnny Bairstow just
He's got him on toast. He's got him on toast. He just doesn't know what to do with him at the moment. He's been out to his wrong'un, which basically means the ball that goes on. So the ball that doesn't spin, he's been out to him 3 times. He's only faced 6 balls in front of him because it comes on, he's lasted 2 balls each innings in front of him at the moment.
Wow.
What do you do with a problem called Kuldeep Yadav? Here's some advice.
Well, this English beautiful summer continues. It's a hot day here at Lord's, but hotter the pressure on England, you have to say, after that first ODI.
Yeah.
To paraphrase some singing nuns in a musical, how does England solve a problem like Kuldeep?
It's difficult. It's difficult to solve the Kuldeep problem overnight because, see, the problem is they're not picking up from the hand. And once you don't do that, it's always going to be tough and you don't learn that overnight. So let's look at the other options which they can do is try and play him out. That is one. Not to really look at scoring too many runs and kind of play it safe and not play too many fancy shots. Play down the ground. If you're not picking the googly or the leg spin, try and pick it. Try and play with a straighter back. The other important thing is they got to pick the length up. If you're not picking it from the hand, the length and line will kind of tell you. For example, a Kuldeep's googly would be pitched outside off stump, maybe the fifth stump because the ball's coming in. And his leg spinners to a right-hander would be pitching on the off stump or the middle stump. So those are the things. And the line and length, obviously, you know, preferably try and play on the back foot. If you're going on the front foot, you can sweep. Those are the things which they need to work on. But mentally, they need to get over this whole Kuldeep monkey that they have on their back or in their head.
It's a big one. Now, Kuldeep himself said after the first ODI that he got his lengths wrong in Cardiff. After England came back after Old Trafford, they did much better against him at Cardiff. And he says he got his lengths wrong. And so it shows that he is fallible, isn't he? How do they get him off his game so that he does start to maybe get it wrong?
True. I think one of the most important things that England needs to do is get Jos Buttler up the order. Right. Make sure Jos Buttler and Joe Root would be the other guy who plays spin really well. Make sure that they are there in the middle overs when the spinners are bowling, Chahal and Kuldeep. So Jos Buttler coming at 6 does not make sense. He's the man in form. He's the guy, seems to be the only guy who's picking the spinners up. So just make sure that he is there post the 10th over where Kuldeep generally starts bowling from.
Well, we did see England come back in the second T20 against India. We will find out if they are able to do so in the second ODI here at Lord's.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Sales of blue and white stripy shirts are about to go through the roof. Meghan Markle's wearing one in the Royal Box down at Wimbledon. That's what's happening off the court. We'll tell you what's happening on the court now. Robbie Greenfield, put us in the picture.
This match is an absolute classic, Tom. That's all I can say. It is nip and tuck all the way. Novak Djokovic has been the better player in this fifth and final set. He's had the better chances. He's failed to convert them thus far, but he is 6-5 up in the final set, crucially. And for Rafa Nadal, this will bring more pressure. Djokovic is serving first. So Rafa will come out at 5-6 down to try and serve to stay in this match. We could be in for another long one, but I got a sneaky feeling that someone is going to make a breakthrough in the next couple of games.
England need... No, they don't. Well, they need to defend 322. India need 323 for victory. England finished 322 for 7. David Willey was out in the final ball of the innings. He was run out. He picked up a very quick fire 50, so well done to him. Nice innings from him from just 31 balls. Joe Root, though, the master of that innings, he finished unbeaten on 130 not out. So England 322 for 7. India, if they would like to take this series home, will need to score 323 to beat England. What's happening in the Tour de France? Chris McCarthy.
24 kilometres to go. It is still Fabien Grelier and Marco Minard who lead the way. Of course, they are part of that little duo that broke away a little earlier in stage number 8. The peloton is closing. The lead is down to under 2 minutes, so it is. So that we will see a sprint finish. That is where your sprinting extraordinaires, the likes of Peter Sagan, the Manx Missile himself, Mark Cavendish, Marcel Kittel, they will all come into the reckoning. But until then, those two individuals will continue ploughing a lone furrow. The peloton will come back at them, probably with about 5 kilometres to go. And then it is just that sprint to the line. We should see that wrapping up in the next 20 minutes or so. We will be off air by then, I appreciate that. But if you can get to a television screen, then do so. Stage 8 of the Tour de France coming to what will be another thrilling conclusion.
I hate to take Robbie's attention away from what is a thrilling game of tennis, but I just want to deal with a couple of golf stories. Why? A crucial week for golfers as they build up and they finalise their preparation ahead of the Open next week. Obviously, Sports Night and The Grill will be all over that one for you in the coming days, so stay tuned for that one. One man who's not had the ideal preparation is Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah, he of the hat. A man who's in great form at the moment, but his Open preparations have been dealt a blow.
Yeah, he stepped back a little bit, and it wasn't a noise. It was something in his shoulder, kind of stretching the shoulder or the back of the neck. And he's still working on it. It's into DeChambeau on the par three. He's out. DeChambeau will not be defending his title at the John Deere. Walking over to shake hands with Davis Love.
So won't defend his title at the John Deere, and question mark whether he'll compete in the Open.
It doesn't look likely, does it? If he's really hurt his shoulder, we saw with Mo Salah, it takes a while to recover from that, and if it is a serious injury, there's no chance he'll be heading over to the Open Championship, which takes place at Carnoustie next week. That being said, hopefully it is not as serious as at first feared, and Bryson DeChambeau, who is a great character, Tom, he's known as the golf scientist. He has a set of irons which are all the same length. It's a very unique and unusual way of approaching the game, and he had brilliant form, didn't he, to win the Memorial Tournament, Jack Nicklaus's event over in Ohio at Muirfield Village a couple of weeks ago. And he would have been, I wouldn't say he would have been one of the favourites to win the Open, but he would have been one to watch, no doubt about it. So hopefully he can recover in time. And I'm reading as well that Tiger Woods has touched down in the UK. He's in London for a couple of days. Maybe he's popping over to Wimbledon to watch the men's final tomorrow. Maybe that's on his mind.
Sure, but he's not having a round with Donald Trump up in Scotland he could at the be, moment. Yeah, a little warm-up round.
He could be. I think Donald Trump is slightly otherwise engaged at the moment, but Tiger,
he did make a point that he was going to go at least 2 rounds in, Donald, during his working trip to the
UK. When asked about Brexit, he gave a good review of the Turnberry Golf Course, which he owns, of course. So nothing like drawing one's attention to oneself when asked tough questions. But anyway, that's a different subject altogether.
The Open gets underway on Thursday with the first rounds. You've given us one to watch, or certainly a couple of the names there, but given the course, given the way that the weather's panned out so far this year, I mean, obviously so much can change, but if someone's to look at the markets at the moment and want to watch maybe going into it?
Oh, dear, oh, dear. It's tough, isn't it? I like shorter hitters and more versatile players. I don't think this is going to be a course for the bombers, Carnoustie. It's very, very narrow. The rough is very treacherous. You need to plot your way around. You need to have a great short game, and you need to have a full control and a full repertoire of all the little bump and runs and what have you that you need on a links course. So the likes of Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, who did so well at Shinnecock Hills, sure, they're big contenders, but I wouldn't necessarily think this would be a tournament that would be so playing into their hands as the US Open. So to conclude, I have absolutely no clue who's going to win. Jordan Spieth is the defending champion. He's had a very quiet year aside from that second place finish at Augusta, but he's definitely one that's capable of managing his game around the links course. Maybe, just maybe, young Mr. McIlroy might finally get his game together.
John Rahm for me. You've heard it here first. Cool, yeah. John Rahm is winning this Open. I promise you that.
It's going to be a cracking weekend of... Well, it's going to be a cracking evening of sport this evening. We've got the Tour de France to conclude in just a few moments' time. We've got the cricket down at Lord's. We've got this thrilling semi-final, Djokovic against Nadal, to be concluded. And then, of course, the women's final straight after that. We've forgotten about that one.
Yeah, Serena Williams, Angelique Kerber, a repeat of the 2016 final. Serena Williams hoping to tie Margaret Court on 24 Grand Slam titles. Quite extraordinary. After everything that she's been through, she is the favourite, but Angelique Kerber has looked very good in this tournament. She is a two-time Grand Slam champion in her own right, and she will pose some tests that Serena Williams has not encountered thus far. So, should be a good one, Tom.
Harry Kane and Eden Hazard are shaking hands in the centre of the field. Why? Because they're about to get underway with their final game of this year's World Cup campaign. It's to find out who finishes third in the tournament. Huge thanks to all of you for your thoughts. Keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8 to find out all the latest from the world of sport. Robbie Greenfield, thanks very much indeed. We've got a problem now. We're sort of split screen, aren't we? We don't know where to look.
I'm not moving. I'm watching this match to its conclusion, that is for sure.
Chris McCarty, thanks. You tell him what's going on that screen. He'll tell you what's going on this screen, and I'll keep an eye on the cricket.
I don't have the heart to break it to Robbie that this is about to change to the football in about 60 seconds. So, Rob, you might want to move and watch the tennis up there.
Right, that's what's happening in the world of sport. Thanks so much, Anee, for listening. We're back next weekend between the hours of 3 and 6. And as we fast approach 6 o'clock, we'll obviously have the Open to talk about next weekend, as we will the World Cup of Sevens. Let's give you a bit of more background on that one as we say farewell. Goodbye.
In July 2018, the Olympic sport of rugby sevens lands in San Francisco for three unforgettable days at AT&T Park, where the finest men's and women's teams will play for the Rugby World Cup Sevens titles. 40 sides will compete, 24 men's and 16 women's. In the men's event, 13 teams pre-qualified, the USA automatically as hosts, and the quarterfinalists from the last World Cup in Moscow, champions New Zealand, runners-up England, Fiji, Kenya, South Africa, Wales, Australia and France. Four places went to the next highest finishers in the last World Series, Scotland, Canada, Argentina and Samoa, leaving 11 golden tickets for qualifiers from the six World Rugby regions. In Europe, Russia and Ireland, Asia, Japan and Hong Kong, Africa, Uganda and Zimbabwe, Oceania, Papua New Guinea and one more to qualify in December, North America, Jamaica and in South America, both qualifiers will be known in January. In the women's event, four teams pre-qualified from Moscow, champions New Zealand, runners-up Canada and the other semi-finalists, USA and Spain. Then the four highest finishers in the last series, Australia, Fiji, Russia and France, leaving eight places to be filled by qualifiers from around the world. From Europe, Ireland and England, Asia, Japan and China, Africa's qualifiers, South Africa, Oceania, Papua New Guinea, South America, Brazil and in North America, Mexico. Once qualified, the teams will be seeded for an exciting new knockout format. In the men's competition, the top 14 are seeded on points won last season and at the first seven rounds of the new series. So South Africa are currently top seed, but that could change depending on results, starting with the first series event in Dubai and ending after Hong Kong. The other 10 teams in the draw will be seeded based on where they finish at the series qualifier in Hong Kong. Seeds 9 to 24 will compete in the qualifiers, with the winners progressing to the round of 16 alongside seed 1 to 8. From here, normal knockout procedure will occur in the championship to find a winner. In the women's event, the top 10 will be seeded on points won last season and at the first two rounds of the new series. So as things stand, New Zealand are seeded number 1 and Spain 10, but that could change depending on results in Dubai and Sydney. As a core team this season, Japan will be seeded 11 and the remaining spots will be decided at the women's series qualifier in Hong Kong. The 16 teams will then enter a straight knockout competition, with the winners progressing to the championship for a shot at World Cup glory.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.